My name is Mac, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mac.
And,
lots and lots and lots. And a whole bunch.
Don't even know.
And that, you know, that's a miracle. Where else would a group of people be together? And honestly, I mean, I believe those people that just said that, honest to God, love me. You know, now where else would you go and become with a group of people? Some of them, they've seen me walking around here, but other than that, never laid eyes on me before in my life, in their life, and can sit there and say that and honestly mean it. And I love y'all too, and I honestly mean it. That's, you know, where else would that be other than Alcoholics Anonymous? I haven't seen it anywhere else, and I've been a lot of places. I tell you, I'm an alcoholic, and what I mean by that, I didn't realize what an alcoholic was when I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I mean by that is that I mean that once I start, if I were to take any alcohol of any form and put it in my system, once I start, I develop some sort of craving that I can't stop. You know, it's that simple. That don't mean I ever lived under a bridge or anything. It just means that once I started drinking, I could not stop. You know, the only time I stopped was when I ran out. And so I did stop, but it was just, I developed this craving that just was unbelievable, and I would drink, and I would drink, and I would drink no matter what. And when I think of alcoholism today, you know, I really believe that what the first part of chapter 5, how it says that it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, you know, and I've had firsthand experiences with deaths in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, direct result of it. And when I hear of the fatalities and the deaths as a result of alcohol and all, I think of the story of a couple of guys named, one of them's name was Jerry and one of them's name was Stanley. And they worked in this brewery. And Stanley had worked there for quite a number of years, you know, and Jerry had been there for a few years. And they'd gotten real close. They'd just gotten real close. Stanley was Jerry's supervisor. And they were standing around this huge tank with 20,000 gallons of beer in it. I guess it was brewing. I don't know. I've never been to a brewery. I don't know what it was doing. But Jerry fell in. You know, he fell in and he drowned. He died. You know, it killed him. And so Stanley, the company figure, Stanley needed to go tell Jerry's wife because they were the best friends. And, you know, that was a hard task for him. And he went, he told the wife. And the wife just came unglued, you know, just freaked out and how awful it was. And, of course, it was tragic. And so she couldn't believe it. And they went on through with the deal. And at the funeral, you know, Jerry's wife was talking to Stanley again about it. She was just going on, you know, how could this happen? It was, you know, this is awful. You know, how could this happen? And Stanley looked at her and he said, well, you know, it really wasn't that bad. Jerry got out to use the bathroom 3 times. So, you know, I almost drowned myself in alcoholism. Opportunities and opportunities to get out. And I nearly died, you know. And I say that, and I've been sober at a young age. You know, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since I was 24. My sobriety date's May 16th, 1989. And I believe that's a miracle. You know, a lot of things have changed in my life from that time. A lot of things. And before I go on any farther, I want to thank y'all. I want to thank the committee. I want to thank Pat, Mike. Mike's not in here, but calling and asking me. Mike, for calling and asking me. And it's just, you know, I've looked forward to this for a long time. And a lot of other stuff has been going on in my life. You know, just life goes on. Not drinking and using, but life goes on. It's not perfect. But I've been looking forward to this day. And I'm just honored. And thrilled to be a part of anything that has to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And not necessarily that speaking comes easy to me. I'm not a public speaker or talking. You know, I'm a talker. I always talk in the clubs. But, you know, it's just like sobriety. It's a gift. I've got the ability to stand up here and be nervous inside and look relatively comfortable and, you know. But inside, just eating me up. And it's a gift, and I've just got to continue giving when I'm asked to do it, you know. And it's a humbling experience, but it's something I'm honored to do. Just glad to be here. Glad to be here. So anyway, I you know, being an alcoholic and stopped drinking. You know, I haven't had a drink since a fairly young age. There's people who've been, you know, a lot of people who've gotten sober a lot younger than I did. And but you know, I just truly believe it's a miracle because at that age, I honestly could not see life without alcohol. You know, it was the farthest thing from my mind was to absolutely quit drinking, period. I used to try a lot of things. I didn't want to live without drinking, to be honest with you. I could not imagine life without alcohol. And that's real sad. You know, look back, a guy's 24 years old. I lived in Eufaula all my life. You know, had a lot to live for, just a lot to live for, and you know, just didn't care. You know, I thought life was nothing but a big party and just get drunk. That's what it was all about. And I'm glad, you know, I was. This is my first being to any sort of thing with the young people in AA. You know, I'm an active in AA, and I'm just thrilled to be here, and I'm glad. I don't know what to expect. You know, I heard the steps and the tradition, the number and all, and I'm like, okay, well, you know. But the deal is, you know, it's okay. It's wonderful to see people who can laugh in recovery, because that's another one of the hangs up I got when I first thought I was going to have to quit drinking. You know, what would I do? You know, I thought it'd just be boring, stupid. And the people, there's one thing, and I've met a few people around here, and if you meet me, you know I'm not going to be. I love laughing and being happy, joyous, and free in the program of Alcoholics. Now, just because I'm not drinking and using don't mean I have to be a boring fool, you know. And I laugh a lot, and I cut up, and I laugh at myself, and, you know, and I'll laugh at you, too. And, you know, but at the same time, there's a deadly, a deadly seriousness about, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I try my best to work and staying sober. You know, staying sober is a matter of life and death. I just happen to be able to laugh my way through it, you know, and sometimes it's better than crying, but I got to cry my way through it sometimes too. I've done a lot of crying the last few months. Anyway, so you know, I honestly believe as of today, you know, I might leave here and pull over to the convenience store and get a beer. I don't know, but anyway, I believe that as of this point now, for my life has really been spared. You know, a lot of drinking, because I see and I know of people who drank for a lot of years, a lot of people in my home group, and I'm not going to say hardcore alcoholics, because I don't believe anybody was more of an alcoholic than me. I haven't seen anyone yet. But, you know, their life just kept on and on. And, you know, I'm scared to death that my life, if I were to start back drinking, I might not die. I might have to go on and on. You know, and that scares me. Everyone... you know, every group, if you've got a home group, every group has chronic relapsers. People who's just in and out and in and out and in and out. And you know, it hurts me. It hurts me. But one of the things that keeps me sober is I'm scared I would be like that. You know, if I were to go back out rather than dying. You know, that would be the worst thing in the world to me to think about having to go back out today. I can think of no other worse thought than having to go back out there and drink and start that whole obsession. It would just, I can't imagine. You know, and, you know, fear don't keep me sober, don't get me wrong, but it's a little thing back in the back of my mind that I don't want that no more. I like what's happening in Alcoholics Anonymous and being sober. So I have been spared, I believe, as up to this point, a lot of years of suffering because, you know, it was unreal how I had to drink and use, and, I used a lot of other things, too. But anyway, you know, I don't know when... I don't know if I was born an alcoholic. I don't know, whatever. I don't try to get into all that. But I do know that you know, alcoholism is rampant, and it's always been a part of my life. Before I ever drank, it's been a part of my life. The first time, I'm not gonna say the first time I drank, I got drunk, because the first time I drank, I was young. I don't remember. It's just always such a part. You know, you go get your uncle a beer, or you know, you open a glass of wine every now and then and sit here. And so I don't remember the first time I drank. But I remember very distinctly the first time I got drunk. And the first time I got drunk was the first time I got the opportunity to have control of my own drinking. You know, it was the first time the bottle was actually put in my hand. It wasn't a sip here and there. It was, okay, Matt, drink what you want to. And, you know, and it didn't take a whole lot. Don't get me wrong. I was only about 9, 10, 8. I don't know, real young. Real young. And but I remember very clear the effect it had on me. You know, another thing I can't talk about, I told you when I talk about alcoholism, it makes me think of, you know, the story about the guy falling in the thing. Another thing it makes me think about is puking, you know, and peeing in my britches. And not that that's, it just does. I mean, that's the kind of drunk I was. And so, you know, those things happened to me the first time I got a chance to drink. The very first time I got drunk, I puked. You know, I had a blackout. I didn't know what it was. I'd been sober a few days before I learned what a blackout was. You know, I didn't remember everything that had happened. All I do know about that first time I got drunk was that when I came, I loved it. You know, bottom line, I loved every bit of it. No matter how, I remember being sick as a dog. You know, I've had hangovers and all that, but I remember being sick as a dog at that young of an age. Just felt like I was so flush, and just, but all I could think about was, daggum, that was fun, you know. I honestly, that's insanity. I honestly couldn't wait to do it again. I knew at that point that I was going to drink every chance I got. It's just what life was about. And, you know, so whether I was an alcoholic then or not, I don't know. My thinking was like one, that's for sure. I know a normal person wouldn't think like that. These social drinkers or whatever you call them, these other folks are get a little drunk or whatever, and they'll go a while without you drinking again. It makes them sick, and they don't drink no more. You know, I didn't think about the sick part. All I could think about was the effect alcohol had on me. And I believe what the big book says about that. You know, I've been through a lot of things about why we drink. I saw on the agenda here one of the meetings how there's going to be why alcoholics drink. And I don't know about anybody else. I drink for one reason and one reason only. That's it. Because I love the effect produced by alcohol. That's it. You know, I loved it. Now why? I don't know. I mean, even though it made me do, I told you, puking. And making a fool out of myself and everything else, I still loved it. It was the only relief I knew. I told you about my first drunk. Well, of course, you know, I didn't become an everyday drunk at that age. I just made up my mind that whenever I was going to, I was. When my drinking, and there was a lot of times between that point and the time my drinking accelerated that I drank. You know, I really don't remember, but there was quite a few times. I got drunk quite a few times going out, you know. I would hide it. If I ran across an extra beer at the house, I would hide it. I wouldn't waste my time with one beer. I'd hide it and, you know, get a few of them built up, and then you and some of the guys in the neighborhood would go camping, and we'd get drunk. But my drinking really took, we talk about rocketing to a fourth dimension in recovery. We hear this saying. Well, I'm going to tell you, my drinking went into a new dimension when I was around 15 or 16, because that was the magical age for me that I started getting to go out on Friday and Saturday nights as a teenager. See, I was a pretty typical teenager. You know, I went to high school, and I really wasn't an outcast. I wasn't a real preppy. I was just kind of, you know, an average guy. I was pretty good at sports, and I wasn't Mr. Popular, but, I was just pretty average. So I did what average people did. When you fall to Alabama, you ride around on Friday. It's a small town. I got five or six red lights at that time. We're a little bigger now. We got a Walmart now. And we just rode around, and so that's when my drinking started. It progressed, you know. It started drinking because every Friday and Saturday night from that point on, you know, I don't remember every time I got drunk, but I don't remember a time during that period that I didn't. You know, I don't. I mean, now I'm sure they were in there. I'm sure they were, because just some, you know, I don't know, holidays or whatever. But I'm sure that, but I don't remember. And if there were a time, it was something, you can bet I wasn't very happy about it. It was something I had to do that I didn't have no money or something. My friends were mad at me, wouldn't come get me or something. There was some reason that I didn't get drunk in that period. And I'm sure there were periods. That's when my drinking progressed. And I didn't know it was progressing. You know, I just thought drinking was the deal. I could look back now and tell how it was progressive by the fact that when I first started at that age, when I first started going out, I think I could buy a six-pack for $2, $2.50. Some Budweiser, and that was in 79 when I was about 15. But anyway, I'd get $5 a week allowance. And I could go out on a Friday night, buy a six-pack, drink three beers, get dog drunk. I mean, woo, have a good time drunk. And have three left over and leave them hiding in the bushes or under the seat of the car or whatever, and have three more for Saturday night. You know, good time. You know, by the time I was 17 or senior in high school, I'd go buy a six-pack and drink every bit of it on Friday night. You know, I didn't realize I was drinking more and more during this time. I had no idea. You know, as a matter of fact, if I did think I was drinking more and more, I was proud of it. You know, that's another thing. All my friends weren't proud of how much they could drink. I'd mix it a good old stiff drink and take a swallow of it, and my friends just, and I was proud of it. You know, that's an alcoholic mind. I was just proud of myself on getting drunk. You know, that was my identity. You know, today today the role's kind of reversed. A lot of my identity is a sober member. I mean, I don't get on the news or public level or anything. But you know who I am. A lot of it is, you know, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. you know, basically who I am. I'm a construction worker by trade, and I love my job, and you know, I'm superintendent, and I take great pride in it. But, you know, the bottom line with me, I can't think of anywhere I'd rather be than be a sober member in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I hope to die here. I hope to die here. Anyway, so that was, you know, that's who I was. I was just a drunk, proud to be a drunk, just was proud. Didn't really think about that it was harming me in any way. You know, as I got out of high school, I excelled in basketball, and that's one of the main reasons I stayed in school. You know, I was a halfway decent basketball player, and I loved it. You know, we went in these tournaments, and we won them, and I'd win these, you know, all-tournament teams and all this stuff. And this is the only reason I stayed in high school. And then I was halfway baseball player. I just played for the hell out of it. But I just loved it. And so, you know, if it weren't for athletics, I never would have finished high school. And I haven't gone on anymore. I've taken a couple of classes since I've been sober, you know, maybe 20 or 30 hours. But anyway, let me see. When I got out of high school, I went to work. That's where I got started working in construction. My stepfather owns a construction company. He's a general contractor, and I went to work with him just as a laborer. And you know, this is where my drinking and my using took another dimension. You know, just like I told you, 15 was a magical point. This was a magical point. I was hanging with men now. You know, I was out of school. I made a paycheck. You know, I did what I wanted to. I drank when I wanted to. I came home when I wanted to. Although I was living at home with Mom. Don't get me wrong. You know, I felt like my mama still let me live home with her if I come home. Anyway, I love her. She loves me. Just everything. My disease got progressively worse after this. You know, I started getting just pure out tired of drinking beer. Beer just quit working for me. You know, it started drinking more, you know, just straight bourbon, whiskey is what I liked. And for one reason, because it got me drunk quicker. You know, I wanted the fastest thing as quick as it could. And today, you know, I have a fellow, and he's drunk now, but he's a good friend of mine, and he tried to get sober in AA, and he was a beer-drinking alcoholic. You know, that was his primary drug of choice. You know, I feel sorry for him. I still, to this day, feel sorry for these alcoholics who try to stay drunk on beer. You know, it was the hardest work. Staying drunk on beer was the hardest work I'd ever done during my disease. You know, it was awful. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without a cooler. And, you know, you gotta... So, it just was no fun. But I would try it every now and then because my behaviors would be so outrageous on you know, look, it's the alcohol, it's the liquor that does it, Mac. So I would go back to try to drink beer, and it's God, dog. So I wound up, you know, didn't fool with beer too much, except in the summertime when you're out on the boat, you know, or swimming or something like that. I think you people have a general idea that my life was basically, was just, I was a living drunk. I've been through relationships, you know. I moved out of the house by the time I was probably 19 or 20, and moved in with a girl that I'd gone with forever, and we lived together for a little while. Then I'd move out. These stormy, you know, I know about stormy relationships, and I believe that alcoholics, practicing alcoholics, and a lot of recovering alcoholics, it's still one of the hardest things I have a problem with today. I'm going through, maybe I'll get to it. I'm going through some of that today. But, you know, alcoholics have a tendency to, if we don't fall in love, we take hostages. And, you know, that's what my relationships in the past have been like. I had me some hostages, and I was hostage too. You know, we were hostages to each other. And, you know, today it's just not like that for me. That's not even being sober today. But anyway, I'd gone through all the relationships daily, in and out of the house, and in and out of, back to mama's, and back to there, and back to there, and into jail, a few jails in between that, just overnight jails. No Canada, DUI jails, stuff like that. You get out in 24 hours, you get in public intoxication, and disorderly conducts, and contributing to delinquency of minors. Now, I don't even know them all, but just a little overnight stuff like that. It wasn't no big deal. You know, that's what I said. It wasn't no big deal. You know, mama will come get you out. You know, and that's another thing about the disease of alcoholism that you know, alcoholics, I don't know if you any of you realize this, but some alcoholics have been known to lie. And I've been known to tell a lie too, but I'm going to tell you what, the scariest thing about my alcoholism that I would lie to myself and could not tell the difference between the true and the false. You know, my battle cry when I was drinking was when someone would say something to me, it was, well, I'm not hurting anybody but myself. That was my battle cry. I mean, every time somebody, and I don't think there's a worse lie than an alcoholic can tell. You know, I mean, that's even more powerful than going, I'm not an alcoholic. That's a powerful lie, because if you're an alcoholic and you got even one soul in this world that cares about you, you know, you're killing them, tearing them up. I can't think, you know, I can't even begin to think of the pain I've caused the people who cared about me. And I didn't think that, you know, I thought, well, they'd just get over it. You know, I'm ruining my own life. Why are y'all hurting so bad? You know, this disease affects people and families bad. And I affected everyone who had anything to do with me, period, during my practicing addiction. Because I can even think on the amends list. You know, there's no way I can even begin to think of the people I'd harm. Because, you know, I got to look at the people like, you know, here I was a halfway decent, you know, I was kind of, the younger kids looked up to me in school, you know, the freshmen and stuff like that, and I was leaving this example, you know, of just total destruction. And I look back on a lot of kids now that used to, you can tell when younger kids look up to you, and they would, and I could look back then, they were living the life I was living. But I did the same thing. I had role models too, you know, that I looked up to, that's what I was going to be like. And so, you know, I harmed a lot of people in that regard, being a terrible, you know, folks who looked up to me and living that life. And look like, hey, you know, Mac's doing all right. He's got it together. He says, there must not be nothing wrong with that. You know, he's not dying from this disease. You know, that's the way I saw it when people talked about dying. When I was still in school, I didn't know anybody who died from it. Know a lot of people today. A lot of people my age die. And the thing about dying, alcoholic death, is it's never peaceful. You know, it's always painful and violent, and, you know, car crashes and gunshots and stuff like that. It's never, an alcoholic death. Now, I've seen some alcoholics who've died in recovery sober and just go like you're supposed to go, and it's kind of, you know, I don't have a problem with death day. It's a neat thing. I mean, if I'm called, but I don't want to die alcoholically, you know. I don't want to die that way. And I don't have to today if I stay with you people. But anyway, you know, you got a picture of what my life was like. It was just, you know, self-will, run riot, and did what I wanted and got away with what I wanted to. Like I said, I come from a fairly small town and you know, whatever. What happened? I don't know. You know, I like to tell. Only time will tell, really, if it were what happened. You know, I know this, that at some, you know, I was approached about my behavior. See, I always had behavior problems. It wasn't the drinking. You know, it really wasn't. My family does not understand alcoholism because we all drink. You know, it's the behavior. All of them don't act like me, though. You know, it was my behaviors. And, you know, so I was addressed again about my behaviors. You know, Mac, you got to quit showing your ass at these clubs. You know, Mac, come on, stay out of jail. I'm tired of going. And it was just these behaviors. And my mother addressed my behavior problem again. And for some reason, this time, the walls didn't go a-flying up. You know? I don't know what happened. I don't know why it was magical about this moment. If it was magical, who knows? All I know is that this time, it was approached about my behaviors, and you know, I just broke down and cried like a little baby. There I was, 24, and I was crying, boo-hooing, and carrying on, and, you know, I got to get help. And I realized it. I just realized I had to get help. And I also had the sense to realize at this point, now I don't know if it's I realized it or if it's God made me realize, I don't know. You know, time will tell. But it's something happened, and, you know, I knew for some reason at that point that I had to go then, or if I didn't, I would talk myself out of it again. Because, see, this was Sunday. You know, I was coming down. I was just getting in, as a matter of fact. And she nailed me at the right time. You're supposed to nail people when they're just coming off one. You know, don't nail them right before they go to get on one or during one. You know, if you want to nail somebody, nail them right when they're coming off it. I had just walked in the doors and was feeling bad. And, you know, and she nailed me. And so I had enough sense to whatever, divine insight, whatever you want to call it, to know that I needed to go then. And she called a doctor and, you know, he made arrangements. And I was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous through a treatment, a 28-day treatment program. And I'd been introduced to, people had talked to me about, this is another scary thing about the disease of addiction. The alcoholic is usually the last person to know that he's got this disease. You know, I was the last, people had talked to me several times about, well, Matt, why don't you go to AA? You know, maybe you ought to go to AA. See, I had an uncle who was in AA, and he'd been in AA for years, and he would go to AA, and he's still in and out of AA. And hell, he's 50, and he got sent to AA when he was 18 for a DUI. And he's, I think he had 6 years one time, but then he got on the pills and all. But anyway, so we knew that when Uncle Sam was in AA, I had enough sense to know. I've been seeing this since I was 13. When he was in AA, you know, his life got a little better. Hell, he even got halfway active in the church, you know, and was respectable. He ran for city council one time. All this stuff when he was sober, you know, in AA. And we used to have to ride by and make sure his car was at AA. You know, so I knew these visions of AA. And so people ask me, why didn't I go to AA when I got up to be around, you know, 22, 23 years old? And I honest to God, this is what my response was. For what? I didn't have a clue. I really did not have a clue why someone thought I needed to go to AA. You know, I knew it was good for Uncle Sam, but I didn't know what it had to do with me, and you know, I was different. Nobody understood what I was going through anyway. I was completely different from anyone else. No one understood. Today, I'm grateful that I was introduced to AA the way I was. I believe one thing about AA. This is a wonderful movement, y'all. This is a wonderful fellowship, and if you're a part of it, you know that. I believe the most cherished thing that I found in that program and that I continue to keep today, I can talk about my relationship with my higher power, and I can talk about a lot of things, but I really believe that what keeps this thing together and makes it special and unique from anything else is our identity. You know, we have a singleness of purpose. Yeah, we got a lot of other problems other than alcohol. You know, I do anyway. I don't know about y'all. Some of you might just drink a little too much. But I've got a lot of problems other than alcohol. And it includes emotion. It includes other chemicals. It's a lot of problems. But what we have in AA that really makes us unique and makes it work, I believe, and from what I've read up on and stuff, is that we've got this singleness of purpose. You know, we've got a reason to be here. Yes, it's to get a relationship with a higher power. And yes, to do all this. And yes, you know, it's to work with others. But it's to stay sober. It's to not drink alcohol first. You know, because if we forget about the not drinking alcohol part, then how could I ever do anything else? So, you know, I believe strongly in the identity deal about AA. You know, there's no way I could have gotten sober in a fellowship that I couldn't identify with. I couldn't have gone and gotten sober in Gamblers Anonymous. You know, what would they have to offer me? I didn't even gamble. You know, yes, the same 12 steps. Yeah, same 12 steps, but I didn't gamble. You know, I can't. I still think people are fools who go throw the money away. I still don't gamble. You know, I don't play the lottery. I mean, I just don't. I'd rather throw my. I'd rather than take a chance. I'd rather go get something for it. But anyway, not maybe get something for it. So I believe in the identity, and I think if I was able to identify there. You know, I remember the first AA meeting I went to. I identified, and this reminds me of a. You know, I got a lot of little stories. This reminds me of a this nudist group that started down in Florida. This nudist kind. It was an AA group, and they were all nude. You know, that's the way you went to AA meetings. And but you know, it went on for a little while, and it got really kind of crazy. And eventually, it folded up. You know, it just went under. It didn't work anymore. And I believe the main reason was, is because they were all comparing instead of identifying. So, you know, if I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and if I compare and I say, well, you know, I'm not like that, or, you know, then I've got nothing, you know. And but I can identify when someone sits down and talks about, you know, starting to drink and losing all control and just insane things coming up as a result of it. I can identify with that. I don't touch base a lot of times. I have different conception of a higher power than tons of people in AA today. You know, maybe I'll touch on that some. Sometimes people think I'm in left field. But, you know, I can identify with the singleness, you know, and that's our primary purpose of being here. And anything else will take care of itself as long as we focus on not drinking and being willing to live by some spiritual principles. It don't say any religious principles, and it don't say more. It says spiritual principles. You know, and spiritual principles are, who knows, you define them. But anyway... So I was introduced to AA, and that was my magical deal, you know, and my first thought was, God, I could have done, you know, I really could have, when I went to a few meetings, I realized that, you know, I could have, just might could have walked in the doors, I don't know, I think I would have had a harder time, but anyway, you know, what it's like, what I'm like today. I'm not going to tell you what it's like today because, you know, it's all around me. My family still stays drunk and you know, but they're wonderful people. You know, I love them to death. And that's, you know, and it's true. The whole world's still out there. You know, nothing has really changed except for my outlook on what's going on in my family and my work and things around me. You know, how I conduct myself has changed a lot. And it's made it seem like it's changed a whole lot. You know, it has made things seem a lot different. But, you know, if I were to fall off the face of the earth, it's still out there. It's going on the same, with or without me. So anyway, you know, I believe, you know, God, the grace of God is while I'm here. You know, I can go on and on and tell you all these things, and I probably will, but the bottom line is, you know, I'm here. I believe I'm here because of the grace of God. You know, I was in a meeting in Dothan the other night, and this young lady was saying, and you know, and that's what's so wonderful about AA. We all have our own view, and that doesn't make anybody right or wrong. But you know, I honestly believe that some of us in the program of alcoholics, and this may sound conceited or whatever, but I believe that some of us in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are chosen to be here. You know, I can't explain any other explanation because I've done things that I shouldn't be here. I've seen people work a lot harder than me to try to be in here and be sober. And, you know, and if it was just a matter of, well, if you come in and if you work hard, yeah, that really is the bottom line. That's a matter of coming in and being willing to go. But why are some of us get willing? I mean, why? There are some people who need this thing a lot worse than I do. You know, I mean, there's people dying. I mean, and I would be dying, too, if I wasn't in here. But it's just unreal. I have to always, every time I think too much about that, I fall back to, you know, it's the grace. You know, that's why I'm here. You know, my higher power has a purpose for keeping me here in these rooms. You know, and why these other people aren't here, I don't know. Why? And this is what me and this girl were talking about. She said, well, you know, God don't want anybody to be out there, you know, doing that. And I agree. You know, he don't want us to. But God loves us so much. The higher power I believe in, he gives me a choice. You know, that's how much he loves me. He don't pull strings and well, he might. I'm not going to say. I just say he could. You know, or I don't even like to refer to my higher power as a he. It's just kind of a slur. I don't know. You know, I have no idea what the spirit of the universe that I believe in is. I have absolutely no idea. And if I were to tell you I did, then, you know, I don't, you know, that's kind of like defining God. And if I ever start defining God, then I put limits on God. And if I ever put limits on God, there's no God. You know, my God is just all-powerful, and I don't know. You know, I got my theories, and I got my guesses of what it might be, but that don't mean it is. You know, that's part of my faith, not knowing. You know, believing, not knowing. I sponsor a Baptist preacher. and you know, one of the first things he asked me what it'd be my spot, what I'd be a sponsor. And see, I'd known him because I'd done some work on his church years ago. And so he'd known me, but he didn't know I was in AA. And so he asked me what I'd be a sponsor. I said, yeah. I said, but you know that got some things got to change. Or be willing to change. You know, I believe in AA, you grow or you go. And I believe about everything about me. You know, I believe if any preacher or Catholic preacher or whoever walks in the door, he's going to grow or he's going to go. You know, the old ways did not keep me sober. My old ways did not keep me sober. And this Baptist priest, his old preacher, his old ways didn't keep him sober. As a matter of fact, he lost the church. So, you know, and there's people wanting to, been in there 30 days wanting to tell me about God and this. And I had to do it. And I said, hey, you know, you can have your own conception, but you leave other members alone. And other people got the right to choose their own conception. You know, and I do that. You know, I've got a right to have my own conception. And mine's probably right in line with his. But I can't throw it on you. You know, I've got no right. You got your own conception. And whatever you're comfortable with is fine. I believe that strongly in the principles of AA. You know, I believe real strongly that we broke off from the Oxford group for a reason back in the early days, you know, and got away from organized and structured religion, because alcoholics would be dying right now. They're already dying because of misconceptions. They come in here and hear things and affiliate it with something else. They're already dying. But, you know, if we told them how they had to believe, you know, if I were to tell someone how they had to believe to be sober, you know, that's just putting, AA is all inclusive. You know, my higher power, the God of my understanding, loves you whether you believe him or not. You know, he don't even ask you to believe in him. If you want to believe, that's great. He loves you regardless. You know, he excludes, the God of my understanding excludes no one. No one. You know, no one, period. He loves everyone in here just the same. And would turn no one down just the same. Even if you, you know, it just, that's just how powerful the God of my understanding is. And you know, I was sitting here talking about my higher power, and when I got to the door, rooms of AA, that was one of the things I thought I was going to have the problem with. Because, see, I knew I was an alcoholic. I'd known that. I mean, but I didn't want to quit drinking. I knew I was an alcoholic, and damn sure almost drank myself to death, you know, and just didn't want to quit. I said I could just quit if I wanted to, you know, just didn't want to. But anyway, and I saw the third step, and I'd grown up in a church. I've been to church all my life. All my life I've been to church. Participated. I belong to a religious denomination where, you know, you do different things and people participate in the service. There's not just a preacher out there preaching the whole hour. And I did all that. And I had a belief in God, you know. But when I got in AA, I still believed in God, but I didn't see what it had to do with anything. You know, I remember Bible stories when I was in Sunday school, and I remember thinking, well, God, what has this got to do? You know, what has this got to do with anything? I couldn't, at that age, I just missed the boat. You know, some people get their spiritual way of life or doing the right thing in kindergarten. You know, some people learn this stuff in Sunday school growing up, that you do the right thing, you love your neighbor as yourself, you know, you love God. They get all these things at an early age. Whew. You know, that stuff went right over. I don't know what happened. You know, it just went over my head or something. But anyway, so that's where I was at when I saw the third step. I automatically associated it with organized religion. And I said, well, you know, I believe, don't get me wrong, I didn't go to church, but it's just a nice thing to do. And I had no idea it could be so deep, and I had no idea of a personal relationship with a higher power, much less any kind of a conscious contact, you know. And so my mind was cracked by some really open-minded, loving people, spiritual, who believed in a spiritual way of life, who weren't trying to cram nothing down my throat. As a matter of fact, no one told me how I had to believe. It was quite the opposite. It was, Mac, you believe any way you want to believe. You know, you can believe any way you want to believe. Now, this is far-fetched, and I didn't do this, but one guy said my higher power could be a doorknob. Now, they don't understand it, and I, you know, whatever. But it was like, a doorknob, that means it hadn't got to be this over here. It could be anything. It really could. They said, yeah. And they talked about things about, you know, if, you know, God, just you could see, how could I explain the chair I was sitting in at the time? It was a wooden chair. You know, yeah, it was man-made, but it was grown from trees. You know, yeah, man might have planted that tree, but it's all, where did it come from? You know, where did it all, man didn't start this earth. Even if you believe in Genesis or evolution, whatever, you know, you can still believe there's a God. Something started this. Something put this here. You know, man did not make that tree. And so that cracked my, you know, that opened up my mind and at that early of an age, I said, okay. So my conception of a higher power at that point was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw, and today it's the biggest, you know, it's today I see more miracles in AA than anywhere, and I'm real active in my church. You know, I saw, they told me it could be a higher power or a power greater than myself. And there were people in there in the rooms, you know, and physically, surely they were a power greater than myself. If they wanted to get up and come whoop my ass, they could. You know, I mean, there was probably 15 or 20 of them in there. Yeah, they were greater than me. And mentally, you put all those minds together, yeah, they were. So Alcoholics Anonymous was a power greater than myself at that point. You know, and I was able to believe that, and I was able, and that was okay, and it still is. That's okay for me. But you know, I got out and I started going to regular meetings and all, and I just picked up on what people said. People told me to pray, and my first thing would be, well, you know, for what? You know, I'm staying sober by not drinking. What do I need to pray for? Things like that, you know. My mind up here, I got this keen alcoholic thinking, you know. Today I still realize my main problem centers in my mind. It's got no, you know, it's my mind. If I get drunk today, it won't be. It'd be my mind, you know, telling me something. So I still don't completely trust. I've been sober a few 24 hours and relatively comfortable in sobriety, and I don't trust my own thinking. You know, I talk in depth with sponsors about major decisions and things like that and people. But anyway, I forgot where I was at. I can't believe that's the first time I forgot where I was at since I've been talking tonight. I do that a lot. I mean, what? I've only done... Okay, that's the... I do that a lot. But, okay, I was telling you about my conception of a higher power, and using the group was okay, and that was a power greater than myself, and I'm trying to backtrack, as y'all can see. Okay. I was telling you about praying, about how I began to start praying, because some of the old AA members in the Youth Follower group, which is over 50 years old, I'm proud to be a member of that group, and been there a long time, same place, same coffee pot, I believe. It looks like it. I know it's the same serenity prayer on the wall. That thing, man. Every newcomer that comes in says something about getting a new coffee maker. Are you crazy? They just don't know that thing. Some of those guys, they started talking about praying. And I heard this stuff in discussion meetings. And, you know, and I don't know about y'all, but I was just real smart. I was an alcoholic. I was one of these guys who come in here and, you know, the AA was a good thing. But what y'all needed was some of my wisdom to help y'all get y'all. Y'all were just wrong about a few things. And I would, but I'd stay around and do it real tactfully, but I'd get y'all straightened out. And these people talked about praying and said it really didn't matter if you meant it or not, because that's the main reason I didn't want to pray. Although I believed in God, I didn't think praying would. And they said it didn't matter if you just do it anyway. You know, do it. And I began. My prayers are real simple, and they're still this today. You know, I get up in the morning, and I'm not a morning person. You know, I get up and I hit my snooze about five times. And I get up and I run to work, and it's as I'm walking through the hallway of the house. You know, it's like, God, please keep me sober today. And as I retire at night, you know, it's just that simple. It's God, thank you for keeping me sober today, and please please give me the knowledge of your will and the power to carry it out. And also asking to remove all my character defects. I still do that on a daily basis. And it's real quick. And I do it on my knees. You know, that was something I'd heard. This guy, man, he's passed away now. He died sober. And he used to talk about getting on his knees. And this was around, I was about 9 months sober. And, you know, here's my keen alcoholic mind. I think, well, that's real good for him. You know, he probably needs to get on his knees because here's a bad case. And but I don't need to because, see, I do just fine praying. You know, I write, pray in my truck. I pray in the shower. I pray, you know, watching TV. I don't need to get on my knees. You know, I was just spiritual. You know, I was doing all this prayer. Why do I need to get on my knees? It was one of the hardest things I've done to this day in recovery. It was making an effort to get on my knees. And I remember doing it. I was in my bedroom. Oh, I lived with my mom 2 years after I got sober in sobriety. So I was in the bedroom at her house, and I said, well, I better try this thing. And it was hard. I caught myself getting down, and I heard somebody walking up the hall, and you should have seen me jump up. I didn't want the dog to see me. I didn't want the dog to see me on my knees. I was scared to death. I closed the door real good. And but, you know, this time, that was 7 years ago, Paul, or a little less. But I get on my knees on a nightly basis. And I don't stay down there long, don't get me wrong, but it's an action I take. And I've got no reason not to do it other than, you know, I'm getting ready to get drunk. I mean, it's just be like, stop going to meetings. Why would I not go to meetings? What sense does it make? Why take the chance? Yeah, I might could go the rest of my life. I don't think so. But, you know, I might could go a week, I might could go a month. But why take the chance? I see people test their sobriety. God, I can't stand it. You know, just wonder how long they can go without going. I wonder how long I can go without going to meetings. I think, God, it doesn't make no sense. But cunning, baffling, powerful, we read that, alcoholism. It is always around the corner, you know. It's a subtle foe. It's trying to get me. But anyway, you know, get on my knees and I pray. And where I'm at in the relationship deal, I'd been... After 2 years of living at home with my mother in recovery and going to meetings every day of the week. You know, I went to meetings every day for at least 2 years. And I went to the other fellowship, too. That's why I was introduced to service work. And then when I flip-flopped over and became a full-time member of this fellowship, I just brought my service work experience on over here. You know, I believe strongly in service work, structured service work. I believe in emptying ashtrays and you know, doing all that and opening the meeting place and talking to newcomers. But I also believe in structured service work, you know, being part of the fellowship as a whole, you know, getting in there. And if your group needs something done, secretary or treasurer, going to district, you know, I believe in all that. You know, it's been a very much, you know, I'm not going to say service work has kept me sober, because I believe my higher power has kept me sober. But I believe my higher power has taken me that direction. You know, as I pray for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry it out, then I have these opportunities come up, and I've got to take them. You know, I've got to go where I'm led. As long as it's the right way, you know. As long as it's not over to the clubs. I mean, I get tempted to go those directions every now and then too. But you know, at some point we got to know which direction to go. So. I don't even know. I've lost my place again. That means it's getting time. I was where?
Macon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I am in Macon. Oh, I do that all the time. Okay. Georgia, isn't it? Okay. And I was told not to tell any Georgia jokes. Or they'd get me. They'd get me with some Alabama ones. But anyway, I lived at home for the first 2 years of my recovery and with my mother. And then here I was, 26. I had to get out of the house sometime. It was a big decision in my life. It was like, I've never paid bills before. Every person I'd been with, in the relationships, the women had always done that for me. Every time, always. I just give them money or whatever, and they'd always, I was always taken care of. And I remember the first month of my rent, I rented a trailer and I went down to the phone company, hooked up my phone myself and the power and did all that by myself, 26 years old. And you all see me strutting around. Proud of myself, good God. It didn't even dawn on me that some people do this all the, I've been doing it for a long time. I honestly thought when I started paying some bills, I was really doing something. And they weren't even having to come get me or call me, or come tell my mama to come pay them for me. That's what the banks used to do. Sally, will you please tell Matt to come pay his car loan? Because she co-signed with me. And just started living. I got into some relationships there. I met the wife, the girl I'm married to now. We'd been married 4 years now. But anyway, I met her when I was probably 3 years sober, and I was coming right off of a relationship that I'd been in and out of for years, the old alcoholic relationship, the love of your life that everybody has, that you never get over, that you're still thinking about right now when I said that. Makes you think back to it. Everybody's got one. And I'd come off of this one, and we were going to get married, and she walked out. And within 6 months from when that girl... 6 months from the time she walked out of my house, laid my ring on the dresser, and I had to be cool. I said, "I'll see you later then." Okay. From the time she left, within 6 months, the first thing I did is I went and bought a BMW, and then I tracked down the lady I'm married to now, and I took her hostage, and I married her. We dated a long time too, about 2 months. This is in recovery. Hey, Mr. AA, going to meetings, buddy, Anyway, and what's come of this marriage is we've been married 4 years. After 2 years, year and a half, I got a beautiful son. He's 2 years old. His little Max, his name. And he's William Malcolm III. That's my name. And it's William Malcolm. I'm Junior. Anyway, just beautiful. He's the greatest thing. He's just wonderful. This girl I'm married to, she's wonderful. She still is. She's a fine person. Last time I spoke at America, we were talking about, I was going through some counseling and stuff. That was 9 months ago. We were going through some marriage counseling. Right now, I got divorce papers on my... They're either in my truck. No, they're at my house. I've been out of the house a month and a half. We've separated, and when she signs the papers, we will be divorced. If we're not fighting. Recovery. I still have a hard time with relationships. I have a hard time, and it hasn't been ugly. It hasn't been like we fought. It hasn't been like. But when we got married 4 years ago, I didn't take my wedding vow seriously. I was ready to get married. She was too. We've talked about that. We have sane. She's a normal person. She's an earth person. She's not Al-Anon or nothing, And so sometimes that becomes a problem too. She don't understand my AA either. I make no bones about it that being sober in AA is the most important thing in my life, with that beautiful son of mine. Because if I'm not sober in AA, I've got that son. He'll still be mine by birth, but we won't have the relationship that we have today. I've got equal joint custody of him right now. Because I'm a fit father. I'm just as fit as anyone to be a parent. My attorney was freaked out. I told him I wanted joint custody, and he's, "You can change a diaper?" I said, "I was the first person to change a diaper. I was the first one." But anyway, so, it just didn't work. It didn't work. Relationships, it takes two. It takes two. But you know what? I've gone through a lot these last two months, and not only one of the things that really shook me with this is is the fact that emotionally I've never gotten over the other one. I've lived with that other girl for 4 years, and just crazy. And I jumped in this relationship, and I've just gotten completely tired. And some people tell me I'm insane. You know, some people tell me I'm insane, but it's something I can't live with anymore. You know, going home to a person you really, you know, I love my wife, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love her a lot. She's a great person, but I, you know, I'm not in love. And going home and just acting like it's, you know, going through the motions, and people do it countless times, and I couldn't live like that anymore. You know, I've got to, if I have to live by myself or whatever, I believe that a relationship is built off of two people's love for each other, and not just convenience. You know, we've got a house and a mortgage and a son, but that's it. You know, that's it. You know, has no, absolutely no, we just come from completely other directions other than that. And so that's where I am, you know, and I may get down the road 2 months from now and kick myself in the butt and go, what an idiot. But who knows what happens 2 months from now, you know? So anyway, that's where I am. But I'm sober, you know. I'm sober, and I enjoy life, you know. And I can still come in here and laugh and be happy in sobriety. And I don't know. I just love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous so much. I can't go on and tell how much I love AA. And you know, I believe it's something I've got to show. And you know, and I try to live it. I try to live it every day. I fall short. I fall way short. Don't claim not to fall short, but you know, I love everybody in this room. It's just so powerful how that works, you know, how that works. And I do. And Pat, just thank you again for having me here. And Mike, thank you for bringing me up. And I believe it's going to be a neat experience. It's been neat so far, and I'm looking forward to staying the rest of the time. Thank you. I love you. Thank you.